San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from KFMB with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up the coast to Seattle, down to Cabo, out to the desert. And you can get us with an app for 760 KFMB. And also, we're free on iTunes if you search It's Your Money and Your Life. And, of course, all the podcasts are commercial-free on iymoney.com and all those other places. And time to introduce the main man of the hour now. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's an accomplished author. He's an accomplished marathon runner. He's a family office expert advising several high net worth families, and his name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm marvelous, Joe. So we have somebody who's real special to us who's back in action tonight.
And who might that be?
Eric.
Oh, that's right. We did.
We should welcome him back.
Welcome back, Eric Rubalcava, our sound engineer who always makes us sound terrific. He was out with a little medical issue, but back in the saddle again, and he's
gonna... Welcome back, Eric.
Yes. Say hello, Eric, to everybody. Can you get the hit a button?
Hit a button, Eric. Anyway.
Anyone. Try. Hurry up. Here we go.
All right. There we go. Thank you.
Our pleasure.
You're welcome.
Eric,
so, a little bit slow on the draw still. But.
Yeah, just a little bit. It's the medication.
Well, you know, it's the first time we've had Eric on the air, for God's sake. So
no, he's been on before. But anyway.
We'll check in.
Welcome back. It's good to see your smiling face.
Absolutely. Now, Richard, you had a couple of things you wanted to promote.
Oh, yeah. So we've got the La Costa Film Festival coming up, starting on Thursday the 18th, runs through the 21st, up at the Omni La Costa Resort.
Open to everybody, right?
Yeah, 18th to 21st, lacostafilmfestival.org. And our good buddy, James Erskine, the movie producer from New Black Films in London, is going to be showing on Friday afternoon at 1 in the afternoon at the Dove Street Library Theater. His film about Marco Pantani, Il Pirata, the famous Italian bike racer. That piece is called Accidental Death of a Cyclist. So we're going to be up there watching that and supporting the La Costa Film Festival. Second annual, so it's their second one up there in La Costa in Carlsbad. So that's really cool. And then...
They'll have three different venues, right?
Three different venues, yeah. They're going to be showing some flicks at the resort itself, and then they're also using the Sinopolis just north of there in the shopping center, and then right on the north side of that shopping center, Dove Street Library in Carlsbad has a film room that holds over 200 people, so they're using that location too. And then September 27th, I can actually attend this, and so can you, Joe, if you want to move your feet, because we're taping our guest that evening. The Solana Beach Sunset Run, sb5k.org. It's a 5K that's on the beach, on the sand in Solana Beach at Fletcher Cove, starting at 5 o'clock on Saturday, September 27th. And we're going to have a big party with live music and a bunch of things to eat.
Kind of like a sunset run, right?
It's called the Sunset Run. So that's going to be at Fletcher Cove in Solana Beach at 5 o'clock on September 27th, really cool event. And my turkey trot, my Oceanside Move Your Feet Before Ute Foundation has sort of taken them under our wing. There's a turkey reference for you.
Wonderful.
And certainly come on out, because we don't have to do radio that night, because we will have taped that show.
Well, who are we taping that weekend?
Gene Roddenberry.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, he's up in Los Angeles, son of the founder of Star Trek.
Yes. We had him down here in July at Qualcomm.
That was a cool event.
Wasn't it, though? We screened his documentary about his father, Gene, and and then we did
a Rod Roddenberry, the father's Gene. Yeah,
well,
Rod.
Well, he's Gene Jr.
But he goes by Rod Roddenberry.
Correct. And... anyway, we're taping him on Thursday. I think he's got some events in town, too, with the zoo and whatnot. So we'll find out more about that when he gets in here. And
That frees you up, Joe, to go get some exercise on that Saturday.
Well, I had some exercise last night. I went over to the Comedy Store. There was a headliner there, Theo Von, V-O-N. He's shortened his name, but
keeps it simple.
He's from Louisiana, and I had seen him at Lestat's years ago, and now he's a headliner, a bona fide headliner, and he... he's also the host of the show on TBS. I think they just got picked up for the second season called Deal With It. I guess it's a Howie Mandel production or whatever. But anyway, he was hilarious. And the guy who opened for him, Jeremiah Watkins, was hilarious. And I had forgotten, how much fun that play. The place was packed Friday night, 7 to 9:30. The late show was actually packed. And I'm sure tonight they're going to do well, if that makes grammatic sense. Anyway.
It doesn't, but I got it.
And we're going to get to our guest, and I swear, in a minute, but I just wanted to thank Michelle Ciccarelli-Lirac and for inviting me to her TED Talk this morning down at your favorite stomping grounds, the the University Club.
34th floor of Symphony Tower.
Absolutely. So she, Michelle Ciccarelli-Lirac and Lynn Shank, former congresswoman, and Jerry Lynn Milana, who's the outgoing president of the San Diego County Bar, they all spoke on the challenge of creating change, mostly from a woman's perspective and a lot of the things they had to deal with. And it was very enlightening, very enlightening. And they actually played a couple other major TED Talk presentations of, you know, that were recorded elsewhere. And it was just a great, from 10 to noon, it was really great. So congratulations on all the great talks today. But how about we get to our guest, Richard?
Why not?
Who also loves our show.
She's one of our sponsors.
Absolutely. So full disclosure, but probably one of the most esteemed and reputable estate planning attorneys and business planning attorneys in San Diego County. And I'm not going to go through the whole litany of her books. We'll get into all that later, but very accomplished, you know, author, lecturer, and everything, practitioner. And her name is Brenda Geiger. Brenda, good evening. How are you tonight?
Thank you. I'm doing great. How are you?
Superior. So, Richard, take it away. Where are we going with this tonight?
Well, Brenda has a real cool book out, but she also has a cool event coming up. And so we have a lot of things to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But I really wanted to start with just asking Brenda why she writes so many books, because I've only ever written one.
Well, should we?
I can't get past that.
Well, by way of repetition for our guests, maybe we should just a thumbnail sketch of your educational.
Well, tell us why you write so many books first, and then we'll do the bio.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Why do you write so many books?
You know, I was thinking about that the other day, and
while I was writing.
Actually, I wrote my first book in the second grade.
Really?
Okay. What was it about?
It was about horses.
Nice.
Yeah, and I've been writing, you know, all my life, and, you know, articles and books and school newspapers in college and high school, when I was in law school.
Weren't you on the International Law Journal or something?
Yeah. I actually...
At USD, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was on the International Law Journal, and it was right around 9/11. Mm. I proposed a topic about, you know, invading another sovereignty and killing, assassinating, you know, government leaders, mm-hmm. or
which
terrorists.
We're not supposed to do.
Yeah. Well, that was basically what the conclusion of the article was.
I mean,
was,
as a President Ford, you know, we weren't supposed to do that. People forget, I mean, what a worldwide demonstration there was against us going into Iraq at the time, mm-hmm. you know. Afghanistan, fine. Get bin Laden, fine. But, you know, taking it in a whole new direction, there was a lot of controversy, which probably prompted your article or...
Yeah, it was a great, you know, timing, you know, to propose that to the journal. So I was very lucky to be in the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a long process, but it was something I'm glad that I did.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your first book about besides horse? I mean, what did the horses do?
You know, I think
you remember?
Was.
You don't. Okay.
It was more about anatomy. I wish I could find the book because I was thinking about it the other day. But you know, just like, you know, what parts are there of a horse, and what do horses do? What do they eat? You know, just things like that.
Don't you know there's more horses? You know what's in the world than there are horses?
How do you like them road apples? But anyway.
So you went to University of San Diego Law School, my alma mater.
Yes.
When did you know you wanted to go to law school to be a lawyer?
You know, I think when I was a sophomore in college, I took a business law course and you know, got the top grade and thought, this is interesting.
So you were a psychology major. You know, Jerry Lynn today, president of the county bar, I think she's the first either woman or first Asian woman to be president of the bar, had the same experience. She took a business law course and it completely opened her eyes to, you know, going into law. She wasn't even contemplating it.
Yeah. I think we read a case called DuPont or something about aerial surveillance over a plant and trade secret espionage, you know, business espionage. And I thought, wow, this is really fascinating. So I really got into it and ended up at USD. I went there for undergrad as well. Got my paralegal degree, you know, just so I would have a marketable skill.
Sure.
And I wasn't quite sure if I wanted to dive in and go to law school. It's very expensive, mm-hmm. time consuming. And you really have, if you're going to be a lawyer, you really have to love it.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, USD is one of the top law schools. I mean, it's not an easy school.
It's a
school.
Great school.
Yeah.
Everything about the school is great. Well, except the basketball team.
You would have to bring that up, Richard.
I would. But anyway, and when did you know that you would be interested in estate planning?
You know, it wasn't until after I graduated. I was going to be a business lawyer. Had done the entrepreneurship clinic while I was at USD, sure. and loved that, and was working for Intercool Therapies, a local biotech that got purchased by another company. But then I went through the third round of layoffs. So I had just passed the bar and got licensed, and then a couple months later I was out of a job. So looked around, and the Lawyers Club kind of helped me discover that, hey, estate planning might be a viable option to start my own practice. So I went and worked for another couple of lawyers for a year and a half and got some real life experience doing that. And
but you also but you do business planning now as well, right? As
part of your practice. Yeah, I have a lot of business owners, so it's really a high crossover area. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Outstanding.
Yeah, well, estate planning is fun because so much of the laws have changed over the last 10 to 12 years.
Yeah.
I mean, back when I was doing a lot of estate planning in the 1990s, our exemption equivalent, the amount you could die with and pay no estate tax, was all of $600,000. And now it's what, 5.34 million mm-hmm. per spouse.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really changed the way people do estate planning. Because what year did you start doing estate planning?
I think
roughly
06, 05.
Okay, yeah, because I want to ask you a question about marketing because you're really good at it. So you know, before the exemption increased dramatically, living trust used to be done a lot to save estate tax because if you had a couple's worth $2 or $3 million, you wanted them each to get their $600,000 exemption or their $1 million exemption. But that drastic increase up to 5.34 million basically meant that about 98% of estates that used to be taxable no longer are, because between two spouses, it's like $10.6 or $10.7 million. So if living trusts don't really save estate tax like they used to, what good are they? What do they do that's so valuable?
Well, I mean, the number one thing I think most people recognize is probate avoidance, since that's, you know, takes 14 to 24 months to go through the probate process on a simple probate.
If it's going fast, yeah.
Yeah, and it costs about, on average, 5 times greater to go through a probate than a trust admin, and it's also open to the public where a trust is private. So that's kind of the obvious, but I think the less obvious is there are so many unique things we can do inside of trust to protect the beneficiaries. Not just from themselves if they're young and immature, but also from creditors, you know, like divorcing spouses, bankruptcy, you know, lawsuits. You know,
as well as protecting business assets, right?
Which yeah, exactly.
Which is something else you do. You do this thing called asset protection, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And what is that in a nutshell?
You know, it's a large body of different things. So, you know, you might use an entity like an LLC to protect real estate, or if you've got a doctor, a lawyer, a board director, somebody that's a high net worth individual or business person that might want to strip off a certain amount of their wealth and put it into a domestic asset protection trust for their own benefit. So they're all different types of asset protection, but you know, it's just a unique body of law.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's a neat body of law because when I was in the estate planning business 20, 25 years ago, we didn't really have much asset protection planning going on.
But Richard, can we hold that thought right there? Because we're coming up on
No, I finished the thought, so I don't have to hold it.
Well, okay.
Okay.
Well, you could hold it and finish it or whatever, or we can re-explore. But we've got to take a break right now. But we'll come back with Brenda Geiger, GeigerLawOffice.net, right after this. Hang on. All right, we are back with a little classical gas from Mason Williams, reminiscent of our interview with Dickie Smothers. That was a terrific show, wasn't it, Richard?
That was a great show. I think we've been playing that song ever since we did the Dickie Smothers interview. Dickie Smothers, San Jose State University, where my daughter Demi is now. Go, that's Demi. Right. Go, Spartans.
Well, both Smothers brothers went
correct.
There.
They both went to. So did Peter Uberoth.
Really?
I
didn't know that. Well, the Smothers brothers didn't graduate. They got too busy with their comedy career.
No, but they got honor. They got whatever degree.
Oh, you know, I'm sure.
They gave them degrees.
They probably doctorates and masters and everything by the time.
Doctorates of humor or something.
So. Anyway, it's also GeigerLawOffice.com and .net. Those both work, G-E-I-G-E-R. So
if
apologies.
You can't spell com, you should be able to spell net.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, we're back with Brenda Geiger.
We want to give away some secrets. Everybody listen up. We're giving away free secrets.
Well, this is Brenda's latest book, Secrets of Great Estate Planning, right?
Yeah, but they're no longer secret.
No.
Because
now they're in a book.
Now you can get their book. Joe, tell everybody where they can get her book, and then we're going to talk about some
secrets. Well, actually, if you go on the website, Brenda and her firm have been kind enough to make her books available to anybody who'd like one. And you just go on GeigerLawOffice.com, and you can get all the contact information right there. I guess you could actually register online, and they'll send one right out. Right, Brenda? Is that the way it works?
Yep. Go to the homepage and click on which book you want.
Outstanding. So
let's talk about the first secret. A lot of people don't really know what probate is. you mentioned it before the break. Can you describe probate briefly and why it's sort of like doing business with the Spanish Inquisition?
In California, yes. In some jurisdictions, it's not so bad. But here, basically what happens if there's a will, you know, it gets lodged with the court and probate gets opened up by the person that's nominated as the executor in the will.
When somebody dies.
When somebody dies.
Yeah.
And then you wait usually 3 or 4 months to get what's called letters testamentary or letters of administration. So you're reporting to the court all of the debts and all of the assets that the decedent had. And basically, you know, you end up filing an accounting. You have a court-appointed person that'll evaluate the value of all the property. And then there are statutory fees that get paid to the attorney and also to whoever's the executor. And if you don't have a will, you still can have a probate. It's just that it goes through what we call intestacy. Mm-hmm. So that's where you just look at the probate state statute and look at who the next to inherit would mm-hmm. be, and then everybody gets noticed. So it's a very long process. There's a petition that gets filed at the end.
Well, plus the probate court is way backed up now because of funding.
Yeah, we don't have our North County estate right. Court mm-hmm. anymore, so it's all downtown San Diego.
Yeah, they're cutting a lot of the legal services down because of reduction in state budgets, right?
Yeah.
Basically. So the standard rule is you never want to go to probate court in any way,
yeah,
shape, or form, right? Avoid it.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and it's especially bad, you know, if somebody has minor children mm-hmm. and they don't do any planning, you know, what's going to happen is, you know, the property will get over to the kids, but you're going to have to report, do accountings to the court. Whoever's mm-hmm. nominated to mm-hmm. to be the executor is going to do accountings every year. And then when the child reaches 18, they have full access to those funds.
Hmm. Right. So let's talk about another secret. So obviously having a living trust is better than going through probate. And I think a lot of people think, well, I've got a living trust, so I'm covered. But frequently people don't do something with their living trust that they're supposed to do. The word starts with an F. Do you know what I'm talking
about? Yeah, the dreaded funding.
Funding. It sounds fun. What is funding?
Funding is, taking title to real estate and moving it into the trust.
Right, so say I own my house, and let's say I'm married, so my title says Joe and Susie, husband and wife, is community property. Is that in my trust?
No. And often, you know, I can't advise, you know, in every case that it should be in community property mm-hmm. first, but
that was just an example.
Yeah, but it's a good point to bring up though, because a lot of people don't realize that it's better to vest title as community property first and then move it into the trust mm-hmm. if it's meant to be a community asset.
Right. So if Joe and Susie both die in a common plane accident and their title reads that way and they have a living trust, they still go to probate with that house, right? Because they didn't put it.
If it's not in the trust.
Funding just means putting it in your living trust.
Yeah, think of it as, you know, you've got this nice car. If you don't put any gas in the car, it doesn't go anywhere. So, moving bank
accounts.
Except
for probate court.
Yeah, except for the probate court.
And I could see in this day and age when you have blended families that if you don't plan well and one parent moves on, there can be a lot of conflict. And if it hasn't been a prearranged prudently with an attorney like yourself, right? I mean, you've probably seen that happen.
In fact, those are often the most difficult.
Try to get the house away from somebody or get them out of the house or sell it out from under them.
So you're saying make sure that you title all your assets in the trust, and you do that by doing what? Identifying the names of the trustees and the name of the trust on title?
Yes. So, okay. For example, on a piece of real estate, it might be Tom and Susie Jones as trustee of the Jones Family Trust, and then the date of the trust.
But people frequently then do things like, this is another secret, they'll refinance their house, and sometimes lenders are picky, and they say, well, we don't want the title in the living trust, so take it out, and then we'll give you the loan, and then what happens?
And they don't put it back in,
right.
Yeah. That, in fact, we have a client care program, and that's what we routinely do is we'll pull title on their house and just double-check that everything's still invested in trust title.
So one of my criticisms of the estate planning world has always been that attorneys sort of treat clients for the particular thing or transaction they need, and they don't follow up. You say you have a continuing care program. That really makes you different. Can you explain that more? Because in my mind, that really, really makes you different than 97.83% of other estate planning attorneys.
Yeah, so we, you know, for a small fee annually, a client could be a member of our client care program, and they come in and they meet with me once a year at least to go over the estate and make sure there isn't any changes that need to occur. Or that, you know, the vesting of their real estate and things hasn't changed. And they can also access me, you know, all year long, come in and make any updates amendments, and then we do a legal directives card, which is a healthcare document banking card. So if they're ever in a medical emergency, medical personnel at the hospital know who to contact right away because that information is right there, mm-hmm. accessible through the card.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, I think, the important point. Estate planning isn't a static thing. You do it, the documents are done, you put them on a binder and put it on your shelf. It's an ongoing, continuing process.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you don't treat it that way, you usually wind up making mistakes. It will cost you or your heirs down the road. You might be dead, so you don't care, but your heirs won't remember you fondly if they have to go to probate.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
We got about a minute to the break, so.
Oh, okay. Well, so I want to talk briefly about one of the great secrets of estate planning. To me, it's one of the great practical jokes you can play. People seem to be inclined to name their kids, either some of them or all of them, as trustee. Is that always smart?
You know, I try to dissuade people from doing that. You know, even if your kids get along great now, it can be a big problem. And even if you just put one of them in charge, it can be a problem because it may cause a war between them. I'm not saying it's always wrong, but, you know, it's just something to consider.
Yeah, we tend to favor using what we call private fiduciaries, professionals who serve as trustee, not big major institutions, but, you know, individuals in small companies that do this for a living because they're really good at it. They're licensed, they're bonded.
Exactly.
They know their business. They don't have any prejudices one way or the other about any set of children. It just seems to work, I think, a little bit better when you don't put... tell you the greatest practical joke of all time. One of my clients, I was looking at his living trust. He's now deceased. He named his 7 kids as co-trustees. I said, Ron, what on earth were you thinking about? Mm-hmm. He goes, oh, Richard, this is my final practical joke on the kids.
Sounds like George Foreman naming all his kids George. But,
yeah, exactly.
Anyway, we've got to come up on our break right now, but we'll be back with Brenda Geiger and more about estate planning right after new sports weather and other announcements. Hang on. All right, we're back with the second half of It's Your Money in Your Life, and now time to for Richard to thank our wonderful sponsors.
I knew I was supposed to do something. Thank you to UBS, Michael Caronte, and Drew Freitas. You know, Drew was back at the U.S. Open, and he was hanging out in Billie Jean King's suite with our pal Billie Jean. So he said he had a fun time there, but he was there when the weather was really, really bad. Right across the street from UBS in downtown La Jolla, also on Prospect Street, Regions Bank, the best business bank in San Diego, Sean Puckett and Steve Sefton. Hey, Sean Puckett, Brenda Geiger, and I actually had lunch at Pacifica Del Mar earlier this week. That was fun. We could actually park in the parking garage now that all the tourists have gone home. Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics, the best CFO company here in San Diego. And I think Jason, the new daddy, is going to be Jason is our guest next week. And hopefully he'll be awake because his wife had another baby. And I guess he's not getting much sleep at night. Those things happen. But I told him, hey, your life will get back to normal in 30 years. Don't worry. Our favorite CPAs on the planet, Polito Epic CPAs, Paul Polito and Don Epic. Hey, Monday, September 15th, that's a big deadline. I think you guys will make it through because you know what you're doing. Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Hey, Joel, that was fun last week at Belmont Park, and Joel is really helping Belmont Park improve their cash flow. With all those improvements, we're getting some real rapid depreciation.
Outstanding.
But that was a neat charity event.
Oh, it was fun.
And we got to play with the new equipment, which sort of worked. Carl Sheeler, Berkeley Research Group, Business Valuation, Risk Mitigation, helping business owners understand the risks that drive the values of their businesses and ways to improve the value by reducing the risks. Last but not least, Geiger Law Offices, Brenda Geiger, Estate Planning, Asset Protection Planning, and giving away a bunch of secrets, cool stuff.
And business planning.
And Joe, our sponsors are great, and people can find out more about them where and when.
I never thought you'd ask. If they just get on their computer, get over to iymoney.com and get their cursor over to our sponsor tab. At the top of the page, you'll see a drop-down menu. All our wonderful sponsors are right there, including Brenda Geiger. And you could find out all their personal information, their contact information, and email, all that good stuff. And they've all been working with Richard for many years with great success, right, Richard?
Yeah, some back to around the late 1980s.
There you go. So
that was in a previous millennium. And it feels like it.
All with great success, I might add. So,
Brenda, let's go to more secrets. Retirement plans. A lot of people think, okay, I'll just name my trust as the beneficiary of my retirement plan because my attorney said put everything in my trust. Is that smart?
Well, the answer is...
I mean, generally.
It depends.
Generally, it depends. Okay.
Typical lawyer answer.
Yeah.
It depends on how your trust is drafted. So it could be if you have the right provisions in your trust document. We call them conduit provisions. Mm-hmm. But there may be a better way, especially if you have a large IRA or 401k or several accounts that aggregate to some large number.
Yeah, I want to talk about it because here in San Diego, we see a lot of professionals where they own a house and then they've got a big old retirement account with $2 or $3 million in it.
Yeah.
And that's basically it. What kind of planning do you do for them?
So that's a no-brainer. Usually that type of client will do additional planning with us through a retirement protector trust. Sometimes you hear them referred to as IRA trusts or mm-hmm. retirement plan trusts. In our office, we call them retirement protector trusts. So this is a way that you can provide some asset protection as well as stretch out for your children and or grandchildren through a trust because you're nominating the trust as the beneficiary, not the actual child or grandchild.
Right. And by stretch out, you mean stretch out over a longer term of years, the amounts or the ability to take income out so you don't have to accelerate and take large distributions.
Yeah. So if it's a non-spouse that's inheriting, you know, there are some rules through the IRS that an IRA could be stretched out based on the beneficiary's life expectancy.
Yeah, because the general rule is you have to base it on the owner of the IRA's life expectancy, speaking generally. Okay.
But when we have...
And when that person's really old, that doesn't give you very many years.
Yeah, exactly. So you'd rather use, if we're talking about a child, they're going to be a generation below their parents, so they're going to have a longer term. There's a single life table in the IRS code,
right.
And you just look up their age and figure out what the divisor is. But they have to start taking those required minimum distributions by December 31st in the year following the original IRA owner's death.
Right. So anyway, the moral of this story is if you have large retirement account balances, you want to be very precise and careful about your estate planning.
Yeah, and we also have a new U.S. Supreme Court case that kind of bolsters why this stuff is so important as well.
And what's the name of that case?
That is the Clark v. Raymaker case that came out in June this year from the U.S. Supreme Court.
And I know a lot of people weren't really happy with that result.
Yeah, so it basically held that an inherited IRA by somebody that was a non-spouse, so in this case it was a daughter, she inherited her mother's $450,000 IRA. She stretched it, which was a good thing, mm-hmm. but then 8 years later she filed for bankruptcy. So in the end, it ran its way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they held that, you know, that was not a protected asset from the bankruptcy creditors. So it was something that she had to utilize to pay back her debts.
Right. And that was sort of a shocking result because we've typically talked about retirement plans as being exempt from creditors, haven't we?
Yeah. So there is some protection for the original owner, but not for the person that's inheriting.
Now, is there any planning that the person inheriting can do, or are you saying that case just makes it impossible to do any planning if you happen to inherit a large IRA?
So it really should be done by the grantor. So the original person, yeah, IRA owner, I should say. So the grantor, I mean the grantor of a retirement protector trust. So they set this up and they nominate the trust as the beneficiary of the IRA. Or if they have a spouse, they'll list their spouse usually first and list the trust as a contingent.
Was there anything unique to Raymaker that may have accepted it? In other words, did she engage in any fraud or deceit, or is that just a standard rule now that you think?
No, and in fact, basically the court held there were three main reasons why they weren't considering the asset protection to be transferable to her as beneficiary. And here in the case, I've got the case in front of me. The first is that the holder of the IRA may never add additional money to the account. So this woman couldn't add her own funds to it. It was just stuck with what she inherited. And then the second factor was that IRAs that they're required to withdraw the money in the account no matter how far away from retirement they are. So, they had to draw down at least mm-hmm. a very minimum RMD. They couldn't wait till retirement age.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final was that the holder of the inherited IRA may withdraw the entire balance of the account and use it at any time for any purpose without penalty. So normally we all have to wait until we're 59 and a half at least
or
to start.
Or pay a penalty.
Yeah, or pay a penalty, when she didn't have to. So mm-hmm. that was the court's reasoning.
So that wasn't really good news.
No way she could offshore then, huh?
No.
So you like holding events at your office. You got one up coming up on October 2 about this topic, right?
Yeah. We have for attorneys, CPAs, financial advisors. Yeah. We teach a lot. Our office teaches a lot to other advisors.
This case was big news and, whatever. I wasn't surprised by the result because...
Well, was it a 6-3 or a 5-4? Was it at least close, or don't we know? I mean, you know,
I don't remember.
Well, maybe I could even look it up on Wikipedia.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway,
I'll find out.
Yeah. So anyway, October 2 at your office. What time of the day?
Yeah, I think it's at 12:30.
Oh, I got your newsletter. I'm going to tell you. I'll tell you when it is. Good thing you have me. Okay. Finance professional, IRA, trust educational event. Tuesday, October 2, 12:30 to 2 at Brenda Geiger's office, suite 115. That's 2888 Locher Avenue, right? I'm going from memory on that.
Locher Avenue East.
Yeah, yep. East up in Carlsbad. And important stuff. So yeah, anyway, the point of this story is if you've got large retirement account balances, you want to do great planning for yourself. You also want to do great planning for your heirs because you don't want that asset going where you didn't never intended it to go, like to somebody's creditors because they made some bad business decisions. Other secrets. What secrets haven't I brought up that you love that are in your book? 25 great secrets of estate planning. What have I missed?
I think one common one that I often will see is somebody will put their child on title on their house.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a couple of reasons why that's bad. And I call it the trifecta.
People do it because it's easy.
Yeah. They think, oh, well, I can just avoid all this estate planning stuff.
But in estate planning, if it's easy, it's usually bad. What are the three reasons why that's not a good idea?
So number one, you've made a gift. And if it's a gift over $14,000 to somebody, you really should be filing a 709 gift tax return.
So unless it's a mobile home in Yuma, it's probably over $14,000 if you put somebody on title for your house.
Yeah. Number two is now you've opened up your asset to the creditors of that person.
Right. So now the creditors of two different people can go after the same asset.
And the third is you've given away part of your original basis, whereas if you would have left it to them through a trust, you would have gotten a step up in basis for your beneficiary.
Yeah, in other words, when somebody dies, the tax cost of assets becomes the fair market value at date of death. But when somebody makes a gift, the tax cost just carries over from whatever the original tax cost was, and presumably someday will cause there to be additional capital gains. But yeah, people do that a lot, and that's why it's important to talk about it in public.
Yeah, or they put their child on a bank account, so and that the same result occurs there.
Yeah, too. Although you don't have a cost basis just there because cash is cash, but it is a gift.
And speaking of cash and gifts, we have to take a little break right now. So can we hold these thoughts, Richard? And I'll give you the Rainmaker result when we come back.
Yeah, I want to know that result
from this break.
I want to know.
Stay
that.
Tuned. We'll be right back. All right, we are back with some good psychology music, the Bob Newhart Show, in honor of our esteemed guest, estate planning attorney, who is a psychology major, Brenda Geiger, who's one of our sponsors. Anyway, Richard, let's give him the good news about the haymaker known as Raymaker.
Yeah, that was unanimous. It was 9-0.
9-0, the Supreme Court. Who said
they can't agree on anything? So.
Sotomayor and all of them agreed. Wow, something else.
Yeah. So anyway, retirement accounts and IRAs, really important, really important stuff. So Brenda, we've mentioned a little bit on this concept of asset protection. It goes pretty much hand in hand with estate planning, because if you happen to be a successful business owner, if you happen to own a lot of real estate, sometimes you sort of wind up with a target on your chest because people like to go after your money. Talk about asset protection, because I know back when I came up in the business many, many years ago, it sort of had a negative connotation, like it was sort of a dirty thing to do. And we didn't see much of it in the 1990s, but that was before states started putting laws and rules in that allowed people to actually utilize the laws and the rules of those states to really help people who own things. Can you talk a little bit about asset protection and why it's important and how it's evolved over the last 20 years or so?
Yeah, so now there are 15 states that allow for what we call self-settled asset protection. And California is not one of them, but that doesn't necessarily prevent somebody in California from setting it up. You would just have to go to a jurisdiction and set the trust up in that jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to use Nevada as an example.
Yeah, we see Nevada and Delaware a lot. I'm assuming you do as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
And basically, you know, the ideal thing to do if you're going to be doing something like this would be doing something in advance of any issue.
Right.
So you don't ever want to already have a lawsuit lodged or the threat of a lawsuit or some creditor that's coming after you and then go and do it, because they're just going to pierce right through that.
Right.
But if, let's say, you're a doctor or a lawyer or business person or high net worth individual, and you know you have assets to protect and you want to carve out some of it, to be protected in the event of some catastrophe. You know, you can set up one of these trusts and let the curing period in that jurisdiction, which is, you know, just a tolling of a number of years. Mm-hmm. You know, Nevada, for example, is 2 years. So there's a certain period of time that has to lapse before you've got that asset protection. And then there are certain types of exception creditors. Nevada seems to have a pretty good hold on the market because they have very little exception creditors. So they don't, like, for example, spouses are not exception creditors in Nevada. So you set this up, you fund the trust. There's usually a distribution trustee that has to be in that jurisdiction. So it could be a trust company, it might be a law firm, a CPA firm, or it could be an individual, private fiduciary. And you can even be, if you're the grantor of the trust, you can also be a management trustee if you like. So there is some flexibility to it. Although if an issue later arises, you may want to resign as management trustee just to add some, you know, layer of protection.
Yeah, we see people, for example, who own very valuable real estate that's not their principal residence. That's, for example, a good asset class to use this kind of planning with.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes businesses too.
Professionals, doctors, in other words, people who, if they make a mistake, end up accidentally killing somebody, can be good planning. It's an ever-evolving field. As you said, there's 15 states now that have different types of statutes that sort of promote this kind of planning, which I think is essentially good. Back 15, 20 years ago, before these states started getting involved, I think the reason why asset protection didn't necessarily have a good flavor is because the states didn't, so to speak, allow it. So nobody knew if it worked. Now we know it works.
Yeah.
Which is a big deal.
And it's huge negotiating power, too. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, yeah. You're just putting up more barriers for a creditor to try to have to climb over, which is expensive. So speaking of LLCs, I know you don't necessarily specialize in business law, but you do some. There was a big change with LLC law here in California at the start of the year that remains a secret to many, many people. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's the old Kilea Act that was the LLC law that came into California, I don't know when, 12 years ago. It expired.
Yeah.
And we got something new. And that has a huge effect on LLCs that were formed, let's say, 2013 and prior.
Yeah.
Well, what was the situation and what is
Brenda, it now? Explain it, because this is really interesting to me. Well, I'll explain it. No, okay. Brenda, you explain it.
You explain it.
I'll explain it. Okay, look, so when the act expired, a new act came in to replace it, and basically it had an effect on the management powers of LLCs. So,
which are limited liability companies.
Limited liability companies.
Everyone thinks it's a corporation, but it's company.
And so if you don't comply with the new act, essentially, you put yourself in a position, if you have old documents, in other words, documents drafted before the law change, of having to get the approval of all limited members of the LLC to conduct business. So, for example, if you want to sell a piece of real estate, get a loan against a piece of real estate, what have you, instead of having a managing member be able to sign off on that, you need to get consent of all members. And Brenda, have you found that a lot of people don't really know that this law has taken much effect or that it has significant consequences?
Yeah. Most of my clients are smaller LLC members. But yeah, I have a few that we've had to talk with them about this. Yeah.
Because what happens is members pass away and then membership interests end up getting spread out to 5 or 6 kids. And all of a sudden you have an LLC that maybe had 2 people that now has 10 or 15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if it's under the old law, if it's drafted under the old law and you haven't, you know, brought it up to speed in terms of the new law, well, and then you decide you want to sell something. I mean, you can be a real mess trying to track people down and trying to, you know, 9-0 Supreme Court decision. We'll try to get 15 beneficiaries to agree unanimously on something. Good luck to you.
So have we adequately described the new situation now, Richard?
Yeah, what people want to do is they want to be very sensitive to obviously drafting LLC agreements under the new law, and to the extent that they have LLC agreements under the old law, where you have more than, say, 1 or 2 members, doing the appropriate amendments to the old document so they come into compliance with the new law that became effective 1/1/14. And again, a lot of folks don't even know that this happened because it wasn't necessarily publicized. Mm-hmm. And the state of California hasn't even necessarily given good guidance about what to do either, which is sad. But I guess, you know, we don't have a lot of tax dollars floating around on the loose for them to put out a public service announcement. Hey, Brenda, the cover of your book, Secrets of Great Estate Planning, it's really cool. Why is the cover of your book so cool?
Because it's got my kids.
Oh, yeah. It's really cool. Do your kids have an agent? Are they getting royalties?
No.
What? Hopefully they're not listening tonight.
Well, at least give them a plug. That's Leonard and Taylor, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And of course, on the back covers the whole family with Len Sr., right? Mm-hmm. There we go. So
you got another book coming out soon, right? Or at least you're working on it. Can you talk about it in public yet?
Yeah, it doesn't have a title yet. David Fries and I, he's a Pennsylvania attorney, mm-hmm. Very well known.
I thought he was a third baseman for the Angels. Oh, the other David Fries. Okay.
Yeah, we're writing a book on advanced estate planning strategies. So we're about 2/3 done.
Advanced typically relates to very high net worth families.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about retirement plan trusts and asset protection, irrevocable trusts. Yeah, all kinds of different advanced strategies. That,
not counting the horse book you did in second grade. It'll be book number what for you?
I don't know. Five or six.
Yeah. Yeah, Joe was making a joke that you need a Geiger counter to keep track of all of your books.
No, I said.
Or something like that.
I said if Richard, CPA is your firm's accountant, would that make him a Geiger counter?
There we go. That's the joke. Okay, that's the joke. So, Brenda, we got this exemption. I always put people on the spot with my final question of the night. Exemption's $5.34 million. It's indexed for inflation, so it's going to creep up and up. Do you think that's going to stay there? Do you think it's going to get reduced someday? Do you think it's going to just keep going up and up? Do you think a state tax could go away someday? What do you think?
And we've got about a minute.
We have about a minute.
I've given up trying to guess what the president and Congress are going to do. I think it's changed 5 times since I've been practicing. Mm-hmm. So, it'd be nice if it stays. But
it would be.
I'm not going to bet on it.
Yeah, I think if we ever had a Republican president with a Republican House and a Republican Senate, there'd be an outside chance of actually repealing the estate tax. Just because at $5.34 million, there's only about 3,000 taxpayers of the estate tax every year. That is to say, there's only about 3,000 estates over that amount that actually have to pay estate tax. Mm-hmm. Back when the exemption was only $600,000 back in the 1990s, mm-hmm. we would file about 110,000 estate tax returns a year in this country.
Okay,
paid. So there's some tax trivia for you to finish up with.
There we go. Anyway,
Brenda, thanks.
Yeah,
October
2nd. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. We have to wrap it right there. Brenda, thanks for being our guest and looking forward to our show next week. We want to thank Eric Ribelkova for being a great sound engineer, and we want to thank Craig Blanking, our account executive, and Dave Sniff, our programming genius here at KFMB. Next week, it's Klaus Reichardt, who will be addressing the drought issue with his products. He's a global businessman. And also Jason Kruger of Signature Analytics. Thanks again to Brenda Geiger, Estate Planning. Get a hold of her. She's up in Vista. Go to geigerlawoffice.com.
Carlsbad.
On the border of Vista.
There you go. And we'll see you next week, everybody. You stay very cool out there, and we'll see you next week. Good night now.